Welcome to Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Brown. This is the podcast connecting people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality and creating change. Since 2017, we've shared the stories of over 100 individuals from every walk of life, from across the country and beyond. Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio partners with nonprofits, creatives, and other organizations to spread the good news that we're all stronger together. Our current partner is the Esteem Awards Pride Index. Founded by Philistine, the Esteem Awards is a 501c3 organization dedicated to promoting positive images of LGBTQ communities and our allies. Since 2007, the Esteem Awards has honored over 300 local and national organizations and individuals for their continued efforts in supporting the areas of entertainment, media, civil rights, social services, businesses, and the arts. PrideIndex.com is an entertainment and information resource portal for the Esteem Awards. Tonight's guest, Tracy McDaniel, is an activist and author. She's also the CEO and founder of Juxtapose Center for Transformation Incorporated in Atlanta, Georgia. Her life mission provides her with the insight to advocate for all transgender and gender non-confirming people. In 2015, she briefed the White House during Trans Women of Color Month. She's been the Grand Marshal of Atlanta Pride and served for 6 years on the Atlanta Citizen Review Board. Her first book, Transitions, was about her journey, taking the reader through the labyrinth of life-challenging experiences. Talented, thoughtful, outspoken, and beautiful, Tracy McDaniel is a force to be reckoned with, and it's an honor to welcome her back to Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio. Tracy, how are you today?
I am very well, Michelle, and thank you so much for having me back. I've been looking forward to having this conversation with you for a while now, so I'm so happy we're here.
I know. I mean, so much has happened. You know, we've gone through the worst part of a pandemic, although, we, you know, in some ways we're still living with it. We've been isolated, getting back out there. You left a six-year position with the review board, Citizen Review Board. So how are things? What are you up to now?
Well, I'm just January, February, March, those are months where I hibernate and just try to rejuvenate and regroup, rebalance myself. So that's what I've been doing, in addition to the work that I'm doing with Juxtapose Center. And I'm also a co-founder of Trans Housing Atlanta Program. In addition to the work that I do as far as advocacy and providing services for housing challenged people, I'm still kind of, I have to be honest, the pandemic's effects are still present, and I'm balancing myself and grooving through those residual energies. So I'm just right now, I'm kind of focused on healing and regrouping and rebalancing myself.
You know, after 6 years, what's it like not to have the Citizens Review Board? And do you still sort of like keep your eye on what's going on?
Yes, I do. I actually, I keep an eye on what's going on. I still communicate with some people, their staff and board members. It was a wonderful 6 years. I learned so much about myself. I learned a lot about community policing and how it's very important for the community to get involved. So all of that remains with me. I'm still doing that work. However, I'm not on the Atlanta Citizen Review Board. It's been a year now. I completed my 6-year term this past March the 12th, I believe it was, and so it's going on a year now, and I've adjusted to not being able, not having that schedule now, you know, the monthly meetings and the community events, although I thoroughly enjoyed it, I'm just really happy to kind of have my freedom now, you know, to focus on some other things. But I do, it took me a minute to adjust to the new schedule.
You know, I know that there are people I've known who've been like involved with like a review board or something, and they get on that and they're there, and then it's sort of like hard to leave. Who did you pass the torch to continue the work that you had done or what was close and near and dear to your heart?
Well, it was my hope that I would not remain the first and only trans person ever appointed to serve on this very necessary police advisory board. However, I wanted I was in discussion with the current mayor's office about possibly appointing another trans, gender nonconforming, non-binary person to the board because, you know, it's very important for us to see us in these positions. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want that. I didn't want my membership on the board to be the last. And so, unfortunately, from what I understand, another trans person has not been appointed. I haven't heard anything about who's appointing whom. I just know. I think they're in the process now of confirming someone else, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't. I'm definitely sure it wasn't a transgender nonconforming, a non-binary person, because it would have been a bigger deal. So yeah.
Mhm. Mhm. Oh, that's disappointing because you know sometimes it looks like we make a lot of progress and you have visibility in that, but then it's sort of you know you want to see it continue. You want to like. Not just open the door and then you leave, but you want to keep that door open. But, you know,
yeah.
You're still there. You're still there. And, I mean, especially when you see that we still have trans men and women, mostly women, particularly of color, being killed. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
still a lot of anti-trans rhetoric and people trying to pass, you know, legislation against the trans community. So it's like we want to have more than just a little visibility. We want to have that real, like, hey, yeah, you're supposed to be at this table, and we really care.
That's our history. We take one step forward, and then we take three steps back. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's the danger, should I say, of being visible. Because people see us and they see us living our authentic lives. They see our power. They see who we really are. And they're threatened by it. And they want to put us in our place. That's why it's important. And I feel personally that my visibility saves lives. Our visibility saves lives. That's why I'm going to show up and participate for equity no matter what. Because I know those people who hate me, who would rather see me dead because of whatever biases or religious or little skeletons in their closets that they don't want the light to be shown on. They want me dead. So I'm not gonna go in a corner and just give up and say, oh well, I throw my hands up. No, I'm gonna fight, honey.
You know, and that's part of civil rights. I mean, you know, for it comes on you like from two things. Also, you know, being black, and you know. Where they want that, like, oh, they don't belong here. But it's something about, you know, when you're there. That's what I always tell people. When I'm there and I'm in your face, you cannot say, oh, I don't know anybody.
Oh,
or,
yes, honey. I never met someone like that. Oh, honey.
Mm-hmm. It's those people over there, you know.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. And
well,
I think
you know,
especially.
Go ahead.
I said especially for young people because when young people see you and see our community out and about, you know, when their parents hopefully more of them. I mean, I know there's some who still are hooked in their parents' biases, but they're going to say, like, well, why? Why can't she come and be with us? You know, how come we can't play? How come my friend can't acknowledge that what their true gender is and be accepted and lifted up and supported?
Absolutely. And that's the main reason why I do, one of the main reasons why I do what I do, is because I want the next generation. I want me at age 7, when I ran away from home the first time, at some point to see this person did it. This person was able to make a good life and to live a life that's contrary to what's expected. My life is an intersectionality. Transgender, non-conforming people, non-binary people, our lives are intersectionality. So every aspect of life affects us. That's why I think it's important for us. You know, we have to pave the way for the next generation, because the generations before us did it. And the Compton cafeteria riots, the Stonewall riots, they were brave, they were bold, and they were unafraid. And so that's what I want to see the youth to see now, you know, images of themselves walking with their heads up and being positive contributors to society, you know. That's important for the next generation, I believe.
Yeah, and to see that those images are, you know, because, you know, growing up, you know, we saw the images on TV of Black people getting, you know, dogs sicked on them or water hosed or hanging and lynching. But then as we come forward, you know, which can make you be fearful. But then as you come forward, then you start to see, oh, well, here are people who are actors in it. And it's the same with our community. You know, it's like, no, it's not, you know, and we're never going to forget things that have happened that have been horrible. But, you know, here you are. I mean, you're out there in the community. You're doing things. You're taking stands. You're not hiding. And that goes a long way. We can't live in fear. And, you know.
Say it again, honey.
Really, you can't live in fear. It doesn't mean that we're going to throw caution to the wind, you know, and I'm not going to be aware of where I am and who's in the room. And be vigilant, because I know that there are people who are out there who are haters, okay? But I'm not definitely not going to live in fear. Wow. Mm. So, I mean,
well, you know,
and I go ahead.
I concur 100%, and that's the whole purpose. That's the whole design of all this oppression and suppression and this superiority. They want us to live in fear. They want us to be fearful. But my creator didn't give me a spirit of fear, honey, and I'm not afraid of anyone. And I watched my mother, as brave as she was, raising two kids on her own in South Carolina. She wasn't afraid. Just a quick story about my mother. She told me when she was younger, she went into Advance Auto Store to buy 4 tires for her car. And when she went into the store, the person asked her, well, where's your brother? Do you have a man that can come and pay for this for you? And my mother got upset and she threw a fit and she was like, I work hard. I pay my own bills. I don't need no man or anyone else to buy tires for my car. And so she left. And so she said by the time she had gotten home, the guy called her and said that he was so impressed that he told her to come get her tires. So that's the kind of foundation I grew up with. That's why, honey, I'm not afraid. You know, you can do whatever, say whatever, but I'm still going to show up, and I'm not going to let you see me in a corner somewhere whimpering.
That's right. I mean, really, that's like, you know, go ahead, Mom. I love that. Because,
yes.
You know, that's what it is. And, you know, you are in your like transitions. I mean, and it's your memoir, but you—that's what you talk about. You know, like you never gave up. You never said you did all kinds of things. You know, and also that we don't have to be one-dimensional. You know,
yeah.
You are far from one dimensional, and all of it is you.
Yeah. Well, if I was afraid, I wouldn't have left home at 18 years old. I was ready to get out of South Carolina as quickly as possible. So once I became legal, I hit it. And then if I was afraid, I wouldn't have come to Atlanta. And if I wasn't afraid, I wouldn't have moved to Los Angeles to get away from a domestic violence relationship. So, I mean, I've always had an adventurous soul, and I've always wanted to see what was out there. And I always knew that, you know, my Creator protects me and paves the path before me in the presence of my enemies. So that's what I've used as a sword and shield throughout my life.
Wow. So I know you wrote your own book.
Yes.
And I heard gleans like you were thinking writing more. Have you written more?
Yes, I definitely have. I've completed my final draft for Neck Bet, The Vote to God is my sci-fi fictitious novel. But let me just tell you what happened. I finished it. I finished the final draft before sending it over to my editor. Sent it over to my editor. It took my editor like a whole month to reply, and I was like, well, what is going on? So long story short, I found out that they were dealing with some health issues and some personal issues, so I had to make the decision of getting another editor, which brings me to the point where I am now. I kind of wanted to take a break. I spent 2019, 21, 22, 23 writing these drafts, so I kind of needed a break from it before I started the process of interviewing and hiring another editor. And then, you know, there was some personal stuff and work stuff that just really took me out of the creative mode, and which is why I'm rebalancing and getting all of the spiritual stuff together so that I can get back into that creative space. Right now, I'm just taking a break from my characters to get my mind together.
I mean, surprise, sci-fi?
Yes, sci-fi. Yeah. It's about Egypt. I love vampires, werewolves, and I've always had the idea. I've always wanted to create my own vampire, and so it was just something creative, just to have some fun. I wrote my memoir, and I just wanted to do something creative. But I've got a couple more projects in the work. I still have to finish writing about my time on the Atlanta Citizen Review Board, and then I've got a bunch of speeches that I've done over the years that I'd like to eventually publish. So I've got some things in the fire. I'm just waiting on that creative space and that creative spark to hit me again. But, you know, I'm exactly where I am, doing what I'm supposed to be doing right now. So I'm focusing on healing, doing some physical therapy, doing some chiro, reflexology, just whatever it is that I need to find my healing space and to rebalance myself. Because there's been a whole lot going on, you know, in my life, you know, so.
And I know exactly what you mean, because that's really, you know, what I did after a while. And, you know, it's like, I said, no, you know, my body is my temple, and I am,
yes,
you know, I'm to take care of it, to heal it, to make it stronger, because I know I've got a lot of stuff to do, you know. I got a lot of stuff to do.
And if you're not physically and mentally prepared in a right place, then, you know, things aren't going to be as well as they could be once you, you know, get in the right space. So it's best to just take some time, take a step back, and just regroup.
So I, you know, as a writer, okay, because I do a lot, you know, like you said, like you've got your memoir, and you do this, shall we say, serious stuff. And then that imagination to do sci-fi.
Yeah.
Was that always in you, always something you said, I'm going to try? Were you scared? Because, I mean, I started at fiction. I didn't finish it, although I'm going to get back to it. But it was like, this might not be good. And then sometimes I'm surprised that my imagination takes me there.
Yeah, and it's a good thing, let your imagination run free, and that's the whole purpose of doing this. Yes, I'm still afraid. I'm still scared, but that's the whole reason for doing it. I've never done sci-fi before. I've always had the idea in my head for 15 years leading up to 2019. And then when the pandemic hit, I had no choice but to write. That was my saving grace, writing during the pandemic those 3 years. So the writing served its purpose at that time. So I'm still excited about it. I'm definitely going to complete it. It just has to be at the right space and the right time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. See, you've given me, you're right, because it's interesting that you say that, because a lot of where you're at is exactly where I'm at, and it's like trying to figure these things out. But then at one point, it was like, you know, okay, me, okay, take care of this temple. It has work to do, you know. I mean, so that is just really, really important, you know.
Wow. Yes, absolutely. And if we don't take care of our temple, then who? What do we have left?
Wow. So, okay. And I know now you mentioned about working on some housing issues. What are you doing?
Well, Trans Housing Atlanta Program is an organization that we established in 2014. We got sick and tired of the trans people being denied access and being mistreated in the shelters. And so we came together and we decided to do something to make a difference. Instead of just sitting on the sideline and complaining, we decided to do whatever we can do to make sure that people have necessities. We provide grants for a hotel if you need a safe space to stay. We assist you with your utilities, your rent, your food, transportation. We just wanted to make sure that if a person needs something to eat, we are able to be there to make sure that they have that and have a safe space. Because I wish in the late 80s when I was going through my domestic stuff, I wish I had an organization like Trans Housing Atlanta Program and Juxtapose Center for Transformation that would be able to assist me and guide me in the right direction. So I'm just happy that we're able to provide everyday needs to transgender, nonconforming, non-binary. And we also provide shelter to anyone that contacts us and assistance to people who, you don't have to necessarily be transgender, nonconforming, non-binary. If you're in need, you contact us, and if we can assist you, then we're going to assist you.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what, I mean, because I had a friend who, well, she's still my friend, but she had a bad situation with domestic violence. But when she went to look for some place to stay, like she was saying, like, you know, there was always a reason. And like she was like, she had everything there, but she had the hardest time finding some place where she felt not only safe, but where she didn't feel like she could go that extra mile. And often she said it was without saying, oh, we don't want to rent to you because you're trans, but it was just sort of like overly asking her about what she did for a living, because they ran out.
That's their way of going around the issue, honey. They think they're slick. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was telling all the stuff that she has, all these issues, and we have some organizations, but nothing that really deals with that specifically, you know, where they didn't come out and say something, but it was. And she said she needed a minute to get it together, you know, and somebody would be there to help and do that. And often that's the case, you know.
Absolutely. I was there. You know, you get in a domestic violence situation, and you just want to get away from that person. You know, you just want a safe space to get your mind together to come up with a plan of action, and so that's what we want to provide. We, you know, I wish it was there for me. Thank God I was able to do what I had to do at the time. It's unfortunate, you know, they ask you these dumb questions, think you don't know what they really want to ask. We just wanted to be there. We don't want no questions asked. You need help, honey. How can we help you? this is what we can do to help you, you know. And a lot of times you go to these places, they expect for you to change who you are. They expect. I know when we filed a complaint against the Salvation Army, they were asking trans people to take off your makeup, take off your hair, dress like this, act like this, to make them comfortable. And I was like, oh, I don't think so, honey.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's one of the places here that that's supposed to be a safe space, a shelter. And in their attempts to be, I guess, welcoming, they put a trans sister, like they isolated her. I mean, they call themselves, well, we were just trying to make sure that she'd be safe. Well, what you did was like you put a huge spotlight on the bullseye
target
on her bed, you know, making her less safe.
Yes, and that's exactly what the Salvation Army did, which is why we filed the complaint against them through the Human Rights Commission. You know, they want to put all the trans people in one little small room, like we're in a kennel or something.
How do you talk to them about if they really want to be welcoming and really provide a safe space in troubled times or any time? How do you talk to them about getting rid of these? Because, I mean, this woman who ran this shelter, and, I mean, she looked there, and, I mean, you could tell, in all seriousness, well, I caught myself making it safe by putting her in this.
They should have asked her.
Thank you.
They were making it comfortable for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. I know that when we were out talking to these organizations. We provide training, competence training to them, how to treat people, da-da-da-da-da. You can do that all day long. But until they understand that their treatment of all people, of transgender nonconforming people, will be affected by their funding, that's the only way things are going to change. That's the reason why I enjoyed working with a former Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, because during her administration, I served on her advisory board, and they made sure that whatever contracts that came through the city, whatever shelters that were getting funding from the city during her administration, they understood that there were consequences if they were found to be discriminated against trans people. Until the policy says, you discriminate against these people, this person, your funding would be affected. They're not going to change their stripes because, you know, we can have one supervisor, one manager there 1 month, and the next there's a whole different one, and we have to start all over again. So until they get it in their brains, the powers that be, unless they treat all people with dignity and respect, their funding is going to be affected. That's the only way that there's going to be change, and that's the only time I want to be involved. If you're not talking about policy changes that include transgender, nonconforming, non-binary people, our community, I don't want to be involved in it because it's just lip service at this point. You're just talking, and we've heard it before. So what are you doing as far as policy, writing legislation that's going to make a difference?
I mean, really. I mean, you know, it's sad, but it's true. I mean, you know, I always raise your hand believing the good in people, but a lot of these organizations that are supposed to be the good people, unless you hit them in, you know, you almost have to drag them to the table. Even though they say where they want to be, they look at who are they getting their money from. And if the money isn't linked to inclusion, real inclusion, and they're not going to, you know. I know that sometimes it used to be like with many shelters, a lot of the housing was made based on that view that homeless people were usually indigent men and people with substance abuse problems, where now it was like a lot to get to where they recognize it could be women. It could be women with children. It can be families. I mean,
when period.
You go with somebody, thank you. You know, it can be families. And then people who are non-binary, gender non-conforming, that all of these do that. Because I know at one point I was at one place and there was like only so many SROs for beds, but they were for men. I was like, well, what about women? What about families? I've been to shelters where you see families. You know, you see these kids and the kids want to know. And when you come in, to be able to talk to them and to see it, you know, it's like we have to make a fundamental, real, substantive change in how we're doing things.
Well, unfortunately, I hope that comes someday, but it seems like we're going backwards. We can't, we, you know, people are in your reproductive decisions that are supposed to be made by your family and your doctor. You know, they want to ban drag queens. They want to ban trans people from using restrooms. They want to ban trans people from being in sports. So hopefully we can get there. Like we said earlier, we take one step forward and 10 steps backwards, you know.
Yeah, I know, because like you said, like we have, I mean, I believe it. I mean, we've got people in who are in all different positions, but then you have this attack on drag queens, you know.
Ridiculous.
You know, well,
you can attack drag queens, but you can't attack this man who's going around sexually assaulting people. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I know. I mean, it just doesn't. And you stop and you see and they say they want to stop this. I mean, the ways that they want to, I mean, they're banning books. I mean, how else? I tell you, a lot of things I learned was from going to the library and getting books. To understand that there was a world outside, you know, just my block, and that I could be other things, and that there were people like me.
You know, and visit other peoples with other places and meet other people without even leaving your home or wherever. You know, that's what books do for you.
Mhm. And it's just amazing, you know, and now it's like they want to see. What does the book say? What does that I talked to a young man who is writing a book, and he's called like Being That Kid. And he talked about being that kid growing up, not knowing that he was different, not knowing what it was different and all like that. And he had saved journals and things here from the time he was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's just like in his early 20s, and he put it together. You know, he's that kid. There's other kids who will read it and identify with it, but, you know, he was like, well, you know, he wanted to read it, but he couldn't get into schools because they said, well, he didn't know if they really wanted that kind of thing. I'm going like, you know, there are other kids right there who need to hear that story.
Who in some cases, their lives will be saved by hearing those stories, reading those stories. That's why it's important for us to tell our stories in our own words, because we don't know who we can positively affect by our words, by our experiences.
So you're right there in the middle of it all, a hotbed.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Okay.
Yeah, but we're resilient. We've seen it before. It's nothing new. We just have to prepare ourselves mentally, physically, balance ourselves, be vigilant.
Mm-hmm. What I love about you is so often when I see a picture of you and I see you doing something, that's right, you have a beautiful smile. And to me, you're just, you know, I'm a fan. You're gorgeous. Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have days when it's like, okay, come on, Tracy? You know, I have days when I go like, you know, well, let me comb my hair if I run up to the store. But do you have days when, you know, you have to represent you? And it's like you say, let me pull it all together and, you know, go on out here and show them that Tracy McDaniel is in the building.
Yeah, well, we have to definitely do that. I have days where I'm just like, oh, honey, I'm just tired or whatever. And in my regular everyday stuff, I'm in jeans, hair pulled back, hat on or whatever, and just comfortable. But yeah, when I have to go out and show up, I have to show up, you know, because they're looking at me. You know, when I served on the Atlanta Citizen Review Board, I knew that all eyes were on me. This trans person coming in and I knew that people were watching me, so I had to come. I had to do the job better than was expected. I have to show them, you know, I can do this job. We can do this job. So yeah, when I go out, I have to represent, honey. And I want to be looking cute, you know. So looking cute and feeling good. What's wrong with that? So yes, I'll put a little lip rouge on and push them up a little bit when I have to, like Dinah Ross said in Lady Sings the Blues.
Do you miss performing?
Yes, especially now I do, because when I entertained, that's where I left all my stress and frustrations. I could be even more creative. I miss it, yes, and I don't miss it at other times. But, you know, there are times when I just, you know, feel that, you know, I wish I had that avenue to express myself. But, you know, I'm still not comfortable with COVID and the virus and stuff like that. So it'll be at some point in the future when someone makes me an offer I can't refuse, that I'll pull out some hair and costumes and maybe do it again for old time's sake. But, yeah, I miss it, to be quite honest.
Well, I mean, you know, really, it is, like you said, there is that part of not being out and the thing that you like doing, and, you know, you just don't, you're not quite there yet, you know.
Yeah.
As far as feeling, doing it.
I don't feel comfortable or safe right now, so.
Mm-hmm.
As far as COVID is concerned, I don't have the virus. I haven't had the virus, and knock on wood, I don't want it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the thing with me. Like, I'm with you. I have, but, you know, I think that I see so many people who are just like, it's totally clueless. You know, like, they don't care. And they want to get all up in your face. You know, I still think that there's a level of caution that we all need to have, you know. And I guess I'm like you. You know, it's like, I don't know. Some things I would love to go do like I used to, but I'm like, I'm quite ready. You know?
Exactly. I still wear my mask in public places. If I'm the only one in there with one on, I don't care. So, yes, I wear my mask, honey. I'm not afraid to pop her on.
Wow. Oh, okay, so we talked about housing. We talked about your writing. What else is on? And you talked about how you were really taking care of yourself.
Yes.
Often, I know people who, when you talk about self-care, like, it's not really in their radar. Or if you say, you know, say rest, take a day of rest, they talk like, oh, you know, I wasted that day, I didn't do anything. How do you view the importance of self-care and rest, and how do you make space for that in busy life?
That's priority one for me. I'm an Aquarian, and one of our characteristics are being serious about health, our health. That's me all day long, all every single day. I'm intentional about my health. I'm intentional about what I put in my body. I'm intentional about the people that come into my space. And a part of taking care of myself is knowing that there are no anchors in my world, in my life, to fasten me to any one situation forever, which means that if I have to, you know, get out of relationships, friendships, where I'm not in relationships where you're being taken for granted and your feelings are an afterthought. If getting out of those relationships, those situations, that's a part of self-care for me. In addition to my meditation, my guided meditations, my prayers and meditations, you know, I have to clear the space in my space. If that's people, places, and things, then I don't have an issue with you know, letting it go. And that's just where I am now.
You know, that letting it go is so hard, because, you know, sometimes we get caught up in people, places, and even things, you know, that it's hard to let go and to move. you have moved from South Carolina, you're Atlanta, you were in California, you're back. What is one treasured item that has gone everywhere with you?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. What is one treasured item that has gone everywhere with me? Oh, my gosh. Let me think about that, because I know when I left, honey, I had like 7 bags. I know one thing. It may sound silly, but when I lived in South Carolina before moving to Atlanta, I attended Chris Logan Beauty College. So when I mm-hmm. when I decided to leave and move to Atlanta, and even when I moved to California, I still have my Chris Logan kit, my Chris Logan Beauty kit that they give you when you first start. So that I would say during that time, that was the one treasured item that I took everywhere with me. It went from South Carolina to Georgia to California. So that was one treasured item that I recall taking with me. And I may think I have a blanket. No, I have now that I have a there was a heirloom a velvet lamp that with a beautiful chained cord that used to hang in our living room when I was growing up. So at some point my mother gifted it to me. So that's the treasured item that I take everywhere with me now. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. You know, it is something funny that it's funny you think and say, well, what is it? You know, if I had to pack up and leave, you know, and I know people have sold everything and then moved on. But wait a minute. What would I keep? You know, what has to go with me?
Yeah. And then my plants, but you know, at one point I wasn't able to take my plants, but nowadays if my treasured items are my plants. Those are my babies, so I'm not going anywhere mm-hmm. without them.
You know, I have a plant, and I call her Grandma, because my mother had a plant. This plant has to be at least 50 years old.
Wow.
And when my mother And when it would get ready to die, my mother would always save like those last two and put them in water, and they'd start to grow up again. My mother passed in her kitchen window. She had, you know, a little bit of the last piece, and I brought it. I've had it, and at one point it just like, I'd say in the past year, all of a sudden it just sort of like went on a growth spurt, and I'm going like, now, and part of me is like, I'd like to break it down and to put it into other pots. And I'd like to, my brother, who lives in California but is moving to Texas, after he gets settled, you know, he always talks about it. I said, I have to figure out a way how I can separate this and give him a part of it. But that's something, you know, and I've moved a couple of times. My mother died in 2001. I've moved a couple of times since then. And Grandma has gone all go with me. In fact, I keep it in my bedroom, you know, so I wake up and there it is.
Absolutely. You take some clippings and put it in some water and reroot it and, you know, get some other babies from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about doing, because, like, I'd like to give a piece to my brother, because he had a lot of plants moving. He said he just gave away all of his plants and he can't wait till he gets settled so he can start doing that again.
Yeah.
I can't my mom, you know, she'd have plants around her all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. That's my therapy, you know, plants, gardening, being in nature. You know, that's where the healing comes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, yeah. So I'll tell you, so you've got all this stuff going around, and, you know, Atlanta is very political. It's interesting because it sits like in the middle of who knows what. How engaged are you in the politics, and how important do you think, as we're trying to encourage people to vote, particularly members of our community who might feel like, you know, who's done anything for me, to get them to get out there and make their voice be heard.
Yeah, I think we've been saying it for the last 5, 8 years. This is the most important time to vote in our lifetimes, and I'm sick and tired of saying it. However, this is very important for us to vote. It's very important for us to get educated about what's really going on and not be bedazzled or bewitched by all the false promises. I think our democracy, reproductive rights, so many things are at threat at this point. So I think it's very important for people to vote. And it frustrates me to my core to hear people who voted for the Biden administration just 4 years ago. Well, before, 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago. And now they're turning their backs on the person they've chosen instead of giving the person the opportunity to do what they said they were going to do. It takes more than one term. And most of those people, they're not educated. You know, they're talking about Biden hadn't done anything. Biden has done so much for us, for this country, that we're not aware of, you know. And just because, you know, we're not feeling it when we go into the grocery stores and wherever we're making our purchases and stuff, you know, that's not his fault. Of course he wants it to change. He wants these corporations to stop gouging us, because that's what they're doing. They're gouging us just because they can, you know. And I'm just really, 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 really frustrated about the whole situation. You know, people are talking about, well, what Biden has done for us, Biden has the lowest unemployment rate on record. As far as black people, black wealth is up 60% relative to pre-pandemic. Biden has helped 8 million renters and families stay in homes, of which over 40% were black. Over $7 billion investments to support HBCUs, $1 billion into Head Start, student loan forgiveness, infrastructure, lower prescription prices, gun safety, reproductive rights, off recession after pandemic, climate change. What else do you want him to do it in the first term? Then we have to realize that when they came in, they had to deal with the mess that this other crazy administration created. So it's just like people, we have a short memory span, and we just give up on our team so quickly because of the rhetoric we're hearing from other people. So all of this stuff about Biden being too old for this and too old for that, do you think these other people are going to be better? We've already seen what they've done. They've already stacked the Supreme Court. They've already gotten rid of Roe versus Wade. They're lying about not getting rid of IVF. They just want to get all into our personal business, into people's vaginas. So compare that to that. Juxtapose those two. And I prefer Biden. And for those people who are saying, well, I'm not going to vote, I'm not just going to, you're voting, you just might as well say you're giving this other fool a vote, because you staying home is not helping. But,
then
I digress.
But it's true. Here we had a primary, and, you know, and so a lot of them said they wanted to send a message. So 100,000 people voted uncommitted. And, you know, that's just like crazy, you know,
for one issue. We have more than one issue to deal with. If Biden was able to tell Israel to stop bombing Gaza, do you think that he would? And I'm sure he has. But it's not up to him.
Thank you. It's their country. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah, their war, and they're blaming Biden for it.
And it's such short-term memory, because prior to that, all you heard about was Ukraine. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm going like, okay. So just that quick, we've forgotten about it, and we're doing that. And I didn't hear a call for people to vote uncommitted about that. You didn't hear them... like, you know, protections for our community protections because you didn't sign
the Equality Act.
Bill. You know, you didn't see them say, well, vote uncommitted because he didn't make the Equality Act pass. I mean, it's like, you know.
Yeah, right. We're blaming him for something that's another country. Of course, we're all intertwined, you know, but still, how can people blame Biden for the war not stopping? How can they blame? He can ask for a ceasefire all day long until he's blue in his face.
But you know, there's so many issues that I feel are everybody's issues, like you know, the environment, you know. We're talking about this crazy weather that we have and the fact that, you know, there was this commitment at one point in time to stop using fossil fuels, and we haven't really kept that. And you see what's happening. You see fires in Texas, fires, California fires in Hawaii. You know,
tornadoes in Wisconsin, first time ever. It's crazy.
You know, so it's like, not only do I want to live authentically, but I want to live healthily. You know, I want to live someplace where it's safe because of the environment and where I live. And, you know, I don't want to have to worry about someone fighting me over food, fighting me over food, which is what you see. And it's not, how do you stop big business? I mean, there's so many issues that you see that could, you know, if you're going to put your pole in the ground, you know, look over this. But as you look at it, all of it comes back to when we don't respect the humanity of each person.
Yeah.
When we discriminate against, when we still have want to hate someone because they don't fit in somebody's cookie cutter world of what is, you know, right, what is wrong, what is male, what is female, you know.
Or subscribe to your religion, honey.
Thank you. You know, we can't begin to resolve all of those when any time when somebody is ready to say, yeah, but not for them.
Yeah, and that's how it is. It's that superiority. They want to be more than other people, and you know, that's what we have to fight against. That's what we have to be aware of. You know, there's always going to be someone who thinks they're better and wants to oppress other people, which makes them feel better.
So are you in Atlanta for the duration and then on into the cosmos?
I think Atlanta is my home now, my second home now. I consider Atlanta my second home now. So Atlanta has been really, really good to me, and there's a lot more that Atlanta has to offer to me. So I'm excited, looking forward to what's in the future, what excitement, what adventures that are on my pathway, and I'm just ready to walk through it, you know. So, yes, Atlanta's home now.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had people been trying to lure me to Atlanta. I know a lot of people. I know people who have moved there, and when I said, they said, oh, you should come down. I like Atlanta. And you know what? I think there's a part of a fear part. And, you know, I admire the fact that you were able to, I mean, no, you know, even though the initial circumstances were really bad, that you just like said, I got to get out of here. But, you know, to leave that safety, even when you were in a bad relationship, there was that safety, that being close to family, that, you know, that place that you remember passing every day. And going across the country, now you're back here. That's something, you know, that's something that I don't know if I have quite, you know, found in myself. Although one of the nice things that I always know, like, well, Tracy's in Atlanta.
Yeah, well, Atlanta's a good place to be. Atlanta, get community and people that, you know, you have to, Atlanta's like everywhere else, you have a bunch of fake people, you know, users, et cetera, but there are some good people here in Atlanta. And I'm really glad that I chose to come back because I was even thinking about moving even further in the 80s. I was headed to Paris, France, honey. to get as far away
Oh.
from possible. But that would have been way too long, too far away from my mama, and I couldn't do that. So I chose California, and I'm glad I did. So, yeah. But I like Atlanta. Atlanta has a lot of history, a lot to offer.
Do you still dream of going to Paris?
Yes, I definitely dream of going to Paris. I definitely will visit Paris, visiting the Eiffel Tower. That's on my list of things to do. That's one of the places where I definitely would like to go. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, in 3 years, I'm planning my special birthday. I've got, you know, and I want to go to Paris. I'm gonna
Oh,
call
wow.
you.
Okay, well, you have to call me before so we can start making plans, honey, so I can know how many much coins I need to start saving up, because I definitely would go.
No, that's,
really.
That's what let's put it 3 to 5 years, you know, because that's what I'm
yeah.
thinking about Taylor right now. I have to figure out how I'm going to do it, but because we'll go to Paris and we'll go do it right.
Yes, why not, honey? I want to spend some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Eiffel Tower, you
yeah.
know.
Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was
oh.
there, I've had a fantasy of going to Paris and get me a job, a gig at Moulin Rouge, honey, making some coins. So that was my plan for Paris.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't know. They're just like things that I've seen. I was like, ooh, Paris. Hmm.
Yeah.
So I have to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep you in mind, you know.
Yeah, just let me know in advance so I can save up some coins and start making some plans, because I definitely have Paris on my list.
What's next? What else, you know, should I just hold on to the science fiction book come out, or what's next coming out that we're going to sit down and talk about?
Well, just between you and I, Michelle, there are some things that are happening that's next for me. I really can't go into details about it. But at some point, doing my rebalancing and getting back to healing,
mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm not anchored to one place, et cetera, et cetera. I will be making some transformative changes as far as the future is concerned. That's really going to shift my foundation and on which I've stood for almost 3 decades now. It's a good thing. It's a positive thing,
okay.
But it's just going to be a transformational shift that I'm looking forward to talking to you about it and telling you about it. But right now isn't a good time to really talk about those details. But yes, there are some exciting things. In addition to my writing and my advocacy
mm-hmm.
work, there are some personal things, some personal changes that are going to be major changes for me. So,
well, I'm telling you, I definitely plan to. Actually, I plan to be in Atlanta. I was there near Christmas. I was only there for like a couple of days in and out. And I said, well, I can't see everybody, so I'll just come in.
Yeah.
And go, but I intend to be down there probably late in the summer.
Yeah,
and
we definitely have to get together.
Yeah, we're going to go someplace where they have nice fruity cocktails. Our sweet tea.
Okay.
We're going to sit there and laugh and joke and hug and plan Paris. How's that sound?
That's what I'm saying, honey. I'm excited. Oh, before I forget, I did speak to Philippa Steam today, this afternoon, and I was honored to be informed that I will be one of the Esteem Awards recipients this year for 2024. So I'm really excited about that. There is going to be an event at the Center for Civil and Human Rights, I think it was August the 30th. Well, the awards is July the 6th. However, there's going to be another event here in Atlanta. So it's going to be at the Center for Civil and Human Rights on the 30th of September. So I'm excited about that.
You know, he's been back and forth. He's been doing a few things in Atlanta with a couple people, but that's awesome. You know, I mean, great work. He does really, really, really great work. and recognizing people who are doing things. I tell you, I often tell people one of the high points is when I got an Esteem Award, because it was like something that I didn't, I'm just doing what I'm doing. And it was like it came from people in your community being honored by your community, not the a big organization and everything, but for what you do. And so, yay!
My people, honey, coming from my people, that's transformative. That's life-affirming. So I'm so excited and honored.
Oh, yeah. Because I know he called me the other day, and I have to get back with him. But, good friend. He is really a good friend and a good person, and I love the work that he does and the people who he's recognized and honored over the years. And, hey, you my sister Esteem Award winner.
Yay, I'm in the club. Yeah. I'm in the club.
Hey, that's right. Well, Tracy, I want to thank you for spending this time with me. We will be talking again soon. I look forward to seeing you again.
Pleasure, my dear. And for everyone that's listening, always remember, human rights are trans rights. Trans rights are human rights. And our visibility saves lives. Love you, my dear.
I love you, too. And I will talk to you real soon, okay?
Definitely. Can't wait to see you.
All right.
All right, my dear. Have a good night. Stay well and safe.
Okay.
I want to thank my guest, the incredibly talented Tracy McDaniel. This author and activist was recently announced as a 2024 Esteem Award winner. We'll be back next week with more interviews of individuals living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of air intersectionality and creating change. You can support Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or becoming a monthly supporter on Patreon.com. Current and past episodes of the show can be heard on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or Blog Talk Radio. Stay tuned as we continue to introduce you to more amazing individuals living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality and creating change right here on Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio. Thank you for listening.